Pop or Talk Up podcast. If you don't know about it, now you know.
Hey, you got something to say?
One topic, two options.
Oh yeah, we got a lot to say. Welcome to episode 102, Unwanted Emotions Triggered by Mental Illness. We are making live phone calls to our guests on today's episode. We will be speaking to the Gab with Gwen podcast, Taming of the Moose, Safe Space, A Typical Social Worker, Wisdom for Well-Being. And do remember that there will be three additional episodes in regards to this topic. So we ask that you listen to them all. Each episode will have four new speakers.
Who are we speaking to, you might ask? Well, we had the chance to speak to licensed counselors, social workers, podcasters, religious leaders, motivational speakers, and individuals who were willing to share their journey with mental illness. We ask that you listen up and you listen closely. If you want to be a part of the next discussion in regards to mental health, please email us at shutuportalkup@gmail.com. Oh yeah, listen to the next caller right now.
Hello.
Hi, is this Gwen from the Gab with Gwen podcast?
It is.
Hi, thank you so much for responding. This is a Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. We just want to say thank you for participating in our conversation about mental health. And before we start, we just wanted to ask you to give the listeners some insight on where they can find your platform.
Sure. So this is Gwen. I'm the host of Gab with Gwen podcast, GABWITHGWEN. Find me Gab with Gwen on Instagram and Gab with Gwen on Twitter. Also, Gab with Gwen on Facebook. I'm the most active on Instagram and Twitter. So come holler at your girl.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely check her out, you guys. The topic today is about mental health. Now, what are your thoughts on mental health in America today?
Well, in the context of 2020, Americans are going through collective trauma. So I can't say that anyone going through 2020 can say that, you know, they're at the pinnacle of mental health just because we're not, as a society, accustomed to dealing with large-scale public health crisis. And you can see by just the nature of how the country is divided and a health issue has been politicized, that we have some mental health issues across the board in the country. Mm-hmm. And just in terms of the normalization of mental health issues, this is continuing to be something that Americans are getting accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
If they are, you know, a lot of times it's not. There's a lot of denial. People don't know how to deal with it in general. So as a country, I think we have a long way to go.
Yeah, I have a Caribbean background. My parents are from the island. And when it comes to mental health, growing up, I never really had no one ever sat us down and talked about mental health, or, you know, even the wording that was used, the education about mental health wasn't something that was provided to us at a young age. What was your experience with mental health as a child or a teenager?
So my parents are also West Indian, they're Jamaican. Mm-hmm. And so my mother, as soon as you were saying your experience, I could hear my mother's voice echo in my head saying that, you know, this and that person, them head no good. Okay, so it's mm-hmm. like their head
right.
isn't good.
Right.
That is basically the phrasing.
Or like, mod. Them mod.
Yeah, like them, yeah, they're mod. Yeah. Head no good.
Yeah.
It's like the two descriptors.
Oh, perfect.
So, this is a sense of day. My mom is 70, so that's what that That is the language which culturally Jamaicans aren't, to me, people who understand the concept of being politically correct or using proper language to describe anything. So outside of mental health, just in general, you know, I feel like culturally we can be abrasive with language. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that is what, you know, I grew up seeing you know, and I think about a cousin, you know, through marriage, who did, if I think about it, I think he eventually was diagnosed with schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, and he was much older than me, but eventually it did come to, I think, hearing voices, certain things happened, and that, you know, she looked into, she didn't know what to do, mm-hmm. but it was in the maritime, and I have a relative who's a police officer, who she asked, like, what can I do? She, not that she was trying to use a police, but just someone who had more experience than her, that's what she had in her tools in terms of her network. And so I believe she did, there's a code where you can have someone institutionalized, you know, but, you know, we she was very cognizant of not wanting to involve the police. So she asked, you know, my cousin who is a Black man, police officer, you know, what can I do, because you don't want to have a situation in which he's hurt because of it, you know? Because of something he's done. And I can remember a story, and I grew up in New Jersey that I don't recall, but I remember there was like a young, like Asian American immigrant who had mental illness, and his parents didn't know what to do. And I think he had a sword or something that he was using, and his mom wanted him to stop, and she called the police, and he was killed by the police.
Oh,
and
wow.
I remember that happened. Mm. She'd read that experience. She's thinking, well, my Black son, I'm definitely not. You know, he's already Black. I'm not going to call him. She was worried. And you know, she had a long journey, you know. Mm. And honestly, the family didn't talk about it. Really didn't talk about it. Until they only talk about it.
Yeah, that's another thing. Even with mental health,
yeah.
We realize that, talking about it, it's not something that happens often. And whether it's because of shame, whether it's because of the lack of education, whether it's because, you know, we think we have the answer. The language that we use, I've noticed that it's just a repetitive language, but it's also because of the lack of education also, and the ignorance towards even finding the education because of what was taught, or we think we know what it is. This person is this and that's that. I think for anyone coming out with a mental illness, shame does play a part, a major part. But do you think that Black men in America, do you think that shame is one of the reasons why they don't want to find out?
Shame?
Mm-hmm.
It could be. I mean, I think it's, you know, multi-layered.
Yeah.
Shame could be one of the layers of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
I think just being socialized as children, we are from very young ages dictated what a girl is supposed to do, what a boy is supposed to do. Girls like this, like blue. There are societal norms that are broader than all of us, and then we have specific ones that and labels and expectations for Black people of, you know, how you're supposed to be, what that looks like, what people expect
right.
Black people to do. Portray or comport.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Black boy and a Black man, this hyper masculinity and this hyper machismo and
right.
hyper all of these things are a part of your identity.
Right, and they're highlighted.
Yeah, weakness, yeah. Anything that's perceived to be weakness or
mm-hmm.
abnormal, not the lack of strength. The lack of respect. I mean,
yeah.
we could go into a whole diatribe about Black men and the concept of respect and how this all manifests itself.
Right.
So think about when you're talking about being vulnerable and needing assistance
mm-hmm.
for something that society as a whole isn't good at understanding and
right.
managing.
Mm-hmm.
As a Black man, you're completely at a disadvantage of so many ways.
Right. Yeah. And it's difficult because it's just where you were placed in society. I had a conversation with a gentleman and he said, you know, if I knew that I had a mental illness, or even if I knew anything about self-care in my 20s, I wouldn't have damaged all those women that I dated. And when he said that to me, I was like, I said, you know how much women would want to hear that? And he said he would go into quiet mode, not want to talk about it, you know, try to drift off into other women. because he can be that other person with a new person. It was just so many layers of it. And I was like, wow, you know, and when I thought about relationships, how mental illness can affect, you know, how two people love each other, how long they will last, you know, thinking about public situation when it comes to Kanye West.
So it is a horrible position to be in, because on top of dealing with the challenges of being with someone who is having an episode,
you have four children.
Yeah, you have four children. And then you got people who are gassing them up.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a tough situation. I'm not in a place to speak negative towards him or to laugh at his condition or to wish death or to wish this negative things about him, because I know he's dealing with a mental illness. However, on the flip side, you know, but when you're a person that your behavior is your regular behavior is similar to your illness, it's hard. And that's what makes people say, you know what, Kanye knows what he's doing. He should be held accountable. Do you think that people with mental illness should be held accountable for their actions? Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, he could just be, you know, just have a lot going on and we don't know.
Right.
Period. So, you know, again, if you're out diagnosed with a child, you're, you know, black boy, super funny, just to push through it, he could be a disguise. It is really just, he does have a lot of mad behavior. Often, we've been seeing it for 20 years, possibly. So, who's to say? Now, in terms of holding people who are mentally accountable, I do believe we should, okay? And I know that might not be popular, not be a popular opinion. Mm-hmm. But I believe we should, because we see these instances of mass shooting, Newtown, Connecticut, killing children, all these things. And are we supposed to excuse atrocities because you have mental illness? For every action, there is a reaction, and there are consequences to the action. It doesn't mean that if you commit a heinous act that you should just go scot-free because, well, I had mental illness. Oh, I was mad. I don't believe that. There are still consequences for your action as a part of being a member of society.
Right.
And so we will take that into consideration, and you can get treatment to help you. I believe in accountability for children.
I see where you're coming from, and I think it's a valid point. Accountability is very important, even with a child. A child, even in the stages where their personality is being formed, they still should be held accountable. Just to kind of get your input lastly, in regards to mental health, what are some self-care tips that you can give, especially in this time that we're living in with the pandemic? We got Black Lives Matter, the movement, and it's not just a movement, it's actually a lifestyle. So that's also a lot of things that's going on as well. What can you share with people during these times, you know, in regards to their mental health? What can they do?
Well, listen, when is terrible at this, so I'm going to go at this. Well, yeah, I'm just saying in general, like, I'm going to say things, and I'm telling things just being transparent, that I'm not that good myself. Mm-hmm. But I recognize that, you know, if people aren't doing it, we all are trying to do the best we can in the situation we have. Mm-hmm. And some people are better at it than others. I am admittedly not good at that here.
Okay.
I'll put that out there.
Okay.
But I will say certain things that I think in this moment it is important to take time for yourself. Now, everyone's in different situations. Some people may feel like I have too much time because they may not be employed and they're trying to figure it out. And they have too much time. Sometimes people don't like time because it makes them think, and thinking can put you down a spiral. Of what you're not doing right or whatever. You know, sometimes thinking can be a double-edged sword. But I do think it's like, take some time for yourself, those moments for yourself. If you don't live alone or you have a lot of people around, then walk, you know, take a walk, clear your mind. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to signs, moments of clarity to clear your mind.
Yeah.
Get past it day, every day, you know, oh my God, this bill, oh my God, this drama, all the, like, just clear your mind. Just think of your thoughts and, like, think of your inner self and center yourself of, hey, like, what is really important to me? Like, what is really important to me in the grand scheme of things? I think that is really important because it's so easy to just get caught up in your that spiky and that cycle of in your head of like the day that do this and that and that, like just really be clear about what's important to me. You know, what am I really trying to do? You know, and for me, I can tell you with everything that happened with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Maude Arbery, even the Coopers in Central Park, it made me as a person, as a workaholic, I stopped and I said, hold on, hold on, hold on. What am I doing all this for? Like, what am I doing with my life and what do I really want to do? And it really was important. And so that's something I keep trying to take myself back, but find yourself, find who you are. Don't get caught up in today, but find out, like, what are you really trying to achieve? What makes your heart say? That's what I'm always talking about. Remember your inner child and what makes your heart sing and what can you do to go towards that?
Yeah, your inner child. You know, when you mentioned that, that's such a big thing for me as well, tapping into that. And forgiveness is also one of the a major tool that I hold on very deeply. But thank you so much for participating in this conversation. We really appreciate it. You gave great insight. You guys, if you want to see her episodes, tune in.
I'll ask your girl. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. And thank you for participating with this in this conversation with the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. We appreciate it. Thank you, Gwen. Have a great day, okay?
You too. Take care.
All right, bye.
Hello?
Hey, this is the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. Am I speaking to Fred?
Yes, this is Fred.
Okay. Hey, I know you're representing the Taming of the Moose podcast. Awesome, by the way. So I just want to get into the conversation. First of all, thank you for joining us. The conversation is about mental illness, the climate of our, not only culture, but society right now, where we're seeing it not only in our personal lives, but in the public, with celebrities. You know, so many things are going on right now. And I just want to kind of get your perspective on mental illness, or have you had any experience with it? Whether it's you, a friend, family, do you have any insight on how we can move forward towards it?
Personally, I've been the first person in my family to be diagnosed with mental illness. I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety and mild depression. Mm-hmm. And I see so much of myself in my family in ways that they haven't just given like a name to the spirit yet. You know, like I think this is something that most Black families also share, where there's obvious symptoms of mental illness in the forms of anxiety or depression, but they aren't characterized as that. They aren't given the correct vocabulary, I guess. Like we have to acknowledge it and like make an effort to understand what those answers are and like discover that vocabulary. But I feel like there's just for obvious reasons, you know, like what's going on in the world today. Like you can see why Black people don't have the time to focus on their identity in that way.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
It's just like we deal with so much social adversity that when we do find ways that we can identify in more ways than one, that's always blocked or curtailed, you know? We need to offer more spaces for Black people to explore their identity and explore their mental and emotional capacity.
There's so many things that
humans are struggling with, right? And then when you break it down into different cultures, and then when you break it down to your gender, just your gender alone, depending on if society is saying you should be this, you should do that, you should look like this,
yeah.
And then also the family you're raising, and then also your upbringing, your experiences that, you know, some people may discredit or may say, you know what, that made you go that far. I would have dealt with it this way.
Yeah.
You know, you're not strong enough, or you're crying for no reason. But I'm just saying it is a human nature for some people to discredit things they're not familiar with or they're ignorant to.
It's like the concept of like the lesser evil almost. It's like you'd rather suffer alone than have to deal with the trauma of being actively discriminated against, you know, or being prejudiced. Like, you can't allow yourself to live your truth. You know, I think, especially with the older generation, you know, like I feel like there were things that our parents wanted to do that they felt there was absolutely like no way that they could do, you know, and that was lived their truth.
Right.
And yeah, they had us, they had obligations, but there was also like that forced societal pressure to have these things and own life as a family.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. So do you think that those same pressures are valid in 2020? Do you think that we have more opportunity now to heal?
You know, I was just having this conversation with my dad, and he is, 53, I believe? So, he's still relatively young, but, hearing how he grew up and how the world was, and comparing that to now, it's like I can't imagine.
What was your earliest experience of being taught how to provide yourself with self-care, or you learning how to give that to yourself?
I am the youngest of five kids, and I have four older sisters, so I'm the only boy.
Oh, wow, that's my dynamic, too. It's it's actually five girls and one boy, and my brother. Anyway, continue.
This might be related.
Right?
there was so much I'm not going to say I was neglected. I wasn't, a neglected boy. But there were a lot of moments where I've had to experience so much alone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I never really found ways that helped me sort of deal with it, you know?
Right.
And I don't think it was until I got older. You know, it's a process.
Okay.
Just living and learning and being able to ask questions. I've always been very explorative. As a young kid, that was a physical exploration. You know, I guess a way that I sort of prepared myself was to go on long walks. I lived in Indiana, and I used to walk over to Calumet City all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's been walking distance from Hammond. And that was, that's what I did, you know, when I had time.
Right. Do you, no, that's fair. I mean, do you think that men and women deal with depression differently? Or do you think that it's not, how people deal with depression is not gender-based? It's just based off that individual as a human.
I think most people deal with it sort of differently based on the intersections of their own identity.
Okay.
You know, I think, like me as a black man, I experience society differently than I do as just a queer man, you know?
Right.
But as a black queer man, I can see the problems that exist in between both of those identities, period.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that creates added stress.
Okay.
Especially when you look at that person's, I guess, entanglements.
Yes. You know what I wanted to ask you? What are your thoughts on Kanye West?
Kanye.
Yes, Kanye is a great producer. Kanye makes great music. But he is an issue. And at this point, like, in 2020, like, all of this shit, whether it be for clout or for upcoming release or whatever, like, it just isn't worth it. And it isn't necessary.
It is what it is. But, you know, when I saw what recently happened to Kanye on with this election and him having a conversation with a young girl, my heart was like, oh my goodness, I just have to pray for Kim. I don't know Kim. I don't know, people upset with her for dabbing in the culture and all these things, and I get it. But as a human, she has 4 babies under 10. I think he's outrageous. He's wild. I think he has the egotist. He got that. It's all over his face. You can see it. But for the most part, because I now have the information that he has a mental illness, I'm not going to approach it and clown him. I am going to be upset or, you know, disagree with the things he say, but I he has a condition.
Yeah.
So I have to be aware of that.
And it's like, I have this friend who recently found out that they had a friend who was bipolar, and she did a lot of very, like, bipolar things because she was bipolar, right. And, like, after even knowing that there was a name for it, I don't know why she did this stupid shit. I like, or like this crazy shit. It's like,
right.
It's because she's bipolar. Like, that's like, you know, like, you have to help people also navigate. You know?
Yeah. Wow. That's true. Helping people navigate.
Not enough to criticize. Mm-hmm. You have to, like, help navigate.
One of my major problems is people taglining with mental illnesses, and they haven't been diagnosed, or they tagline onto it for sympathy. It's a big confusion because you have people that, you know, it's like the wearing glasses, you know, people that wear glasses that don't need glasses, or saying I'm a geek or I'm a nerd because now it's a trend to be a geek or a nerd. The trend of, oh, I have a mental illness, so they can be excused of being an actual shitty person. That's what I'm not for.
Instead, lack of accountability.
Lack of accountability. But when I hear people say, people do random wild stuff, like, you know, I'm like, oh, I did that because I'm bipolar. Like, nah, don't do that. Don't play with people. People really out here are bipolar. People really out here struggling with the noises in their head. I don't share that same experience, but I know people are. So when I see or just kind of be around a person that I feel like you're just using this just to gain attention, and we got people that's really struggling, that's the problem. Now it's hard for people to try to figure it out and have sympathy, because we don't know who's real from not.
Yeah, exactly. My best friend is bipolar.
Okay.
And I know him enough to understand, like, how that is for him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And hearing someone say, like, oh, I'm bipolar just because they, like, were, like, mad 1 second at something, you know, that
right.
has been reasonable or not, you know, like, that doesn't matter, and then they get over it or laugh or whatever. It's like, that's not
bipolar.
It's not enough to... It's not enough to know the vocabulary. Like, you also have to understand
the depths,
like, its behavior as well.
I think it's lazy for people to just want to self diagnose themselves because the lack of accountability, or because they don't like to be called out on their bullshit. And so going back to
they
use mental illness. Huh?
I said we all know somebody.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when I was a kid and my mom wanted, when it was time for me to get my ass whooped or I did something or whatever, and it was time for me to get reprimanded or whatever it was or punishment, I would sometimes act like I'm sick. I would. So as an adult, I'm not doing that because I don't have to do that. But I can imagine me, oh, Don't beat me now. I'm not feeling well. Like, or, you know, kids that lie and say they don't feel well so they can, you know, not go to school. You know, adults that lie and say, hey, I'm calling out because I'm sick, but I'm actually at a Kanye West concert. You know, so I'm at a Kanye rally. And look, let me tell you something. More power for Kanye for getting the energy to want to, you know, feel like he can do certain things. But my whole thing is that I can't trust you at being my president because you signed up to be president late. You're not even punctual. That's my issue. You didn't even sign up to be president on time. Like, that right...
I'm screaming.
No, I'm just being honest. Like, that right there is one of my... Like, that right there is why I don't want to vote for you. Not because you're a black man.
Not even on time.
You wasn't even on time to sign up to become president. And this is me not trying to make fun of his condition, but this is me just being out black and white because I'm being logical. I don't want to vote for you because you are
that decision.
Yeah. You were like last minute
choice.
Yeah, you last minute one, you know, and that's right there, you know, it sucks cuz someone said, "Okay, Kanye or Trump." And it's like, "Damn." You know, I already know the bullshit that Trump's going to give us. I don't know what the new is. It's just ridiculous. But can you hear me? Oh, I'm sorry. I pressed mute. I'm sorry. This is Shut Up and Talk Up podcast. I pressed mute. I'm sorry. You couldn't even hear. You're like, hello. What are your thoughts on Tamar's situation? I think people don't understand the outside pressures that other individuals are experiencing. And when I heard that, I don't know this lady at all. I don't watch on TV. I don't know. But as a human, my heart was just like, oh, man. What are your thoughts on suicide?
I think it takes empathy when it comes to suicide or suicidal thoughts or, like, any kind of, like, self-harm. Like, I personally don't know what it's like to want to go that far.
Mm-hmm. Me either.
And it frightens me if someone is, you know, like, if they're not idea, like, it frightens me. Because that doesn't give them the opportunity to see the benefits of life.
Right.
You know? My heart goes out to Tamar. Cause
Much love to Tamar and her family. Yeah. I definitely agree. Well, Fred, I want to thank you so much for having this conversation. I really do appreciate it. You've been awesome. You guys, make sure you guys tune in to Taming of the Moose. Where can they find your podcast?
Oh, you can find me on Spotify at Safe Space with Taming of the Moose. And you can also catch me on Instagram at Taming of the Moose, as well as SoundCloud at Taming of the Moose.
All right. Well, this is the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast, and we are collaborating and we are trying to address the mental illness situation we got going on. Thank you so much, Fred, for joining us, okay? All right. Thank you ladies for joining the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. I just want to let everyone know that we have Shanti and is it Gillian?
Jillian.
And these intelligent ladies are a part of the Atypical Social Worker podcast. Okay, so what are your thoughts about mental illness?
So this is Shanti speaking. So, I mean, honestly, I've been a social worker for way over 8 years now, but even before I was a social worker, I worked with adults with developmental disabilities, and a lot of them had co-occurring mental health-related things, so honestly, labels are tough for me, just because I think sometimes in our society, when we put labels on people, even if they have, like, a health connotation to them, sometimes we kind of put them in this box, and so I try very hard to... In social work, we call it being person-centered. So you kind of refer to the person first and not their diagnosis.
Right.
And that's just a way to see a person as who they are versus what someone has diagnosed them as. So I think for me, mental health is, one, a very real thing and something that, as a black woman, I've struggled a lot as I have entered into this profession to get my family to understand that mental health is a real thing. My father is very old school and traditional in the fact that he just doesn't think mental health is real, honestly. And it's kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, definitely what you just said, like, in terms of just even that negative connotation of, like, if you're struggling with mental health, then somehow you're weak or how you're crazy. And that's something that I really think that as people in general, but definitely people of color, like, we're starting to remove those things from our vocabulary as a means to, I guess, like, describe people. Mm-hmm. Because, like, some people are really, like, every day is a struggle. And to just, you know, kind of say, oh, you're crazy, or oh, you're just being dramatic, like, it's really dismissive to what they're actually experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I just think it's important to, one, bring awareness to mental health.
Right.
And to also make sure that we start having dialogues, because it's important, because if we don't create a space where people can freely talk, then people are going to always keep stuff bottled up.
I was going to say, I agree, Jillian. I think mental health is a very, very public topic, especially Black communities that maybe face socioeconomic issues.
Yes.
Of course, we can tie all of this stuff, mental health issues, socioeconomic issues, racism. You know, we can tie all of this back to a system of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of Black people that were raised, we were raised thinking, you know, we have to be strong. We have to survive.
Right.
And people who are raised on survival kind of navigate the world differently than people who are raised on, like, love. I think sometimes we ignore those things, like mental health. We don't think of it as my body's sick, I go to the doctor.
Right.
If I have a toothache, I go to the dentist. Because to us, it's not important enough. It's not detrimental to our survival.
The aftermath of trauma is a big deal. And when you're raised in a culture that tells you to suck it up, we still have trauma in our bloodline, in our bloodstream, in our makeup.
It's
genetic.
Yeah. But as people, we go through a lot. But we don't go through things so our children can go through it too.
Exactly.
We go through things so that we can avoid people coming up under us having to fight the same battles.
Right.
Like, there's people who struggle. No, they're more than that. They were doctors. They were lawyers. They were storytellers.
Yeah.
So I think we also have to be careful, even when we stay in our community, well, our ancestors went through worse. Yes, they did. But they went through it so that we could stand on their shoulders
right.
and not have to. So I was just going to mention, you had mentioned something about, like, PTSD, right?
Yeah.
Not to get, like, too social worky, but...
No, do your thing. Do your thing. It's the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. You know, we here. We reached out to you guys because we believe in you guys. So go ahead.
So we had an episode a few weeks ago, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, where we talked about trauma and we talked about this study called the ACE study, which is Adverse of Childhood Experiences. And so... And talking about that, like, research shows that people of color, especially Black people, experience more ACE triggers than any other race in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, on the ACE scale, when you do it, it's a lot of different things. So it could be divorce, it could be seeing somebody die, it could be having a parent addicted to drugs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But time and time again, Black children are scoring way higher than other children. And so what that shows that, again, like, when you think of childhood development and things like sometimes we carry so much baggage into our adulthood that's unresolved because, again, we're told don't talk about it outside this house or, you know, whatever, your ancestors went through more, so you should be thankful you got a roof over your head.
Or in some situations, parents or siblings may compare, oh, look at your brother. Your brother was able to do this.
Are linked directly to issues that we see predominantly in Black communities. So high blood pressure, cardiovascular issues, obesity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so all of these things they're interconnected. And I think instead of looking at mental health, physical health, all those things as separate entities, we have to look at them as intersections that are connected to each other so that we can have more like holistic treatment of the people in our community,
you know,
as opposed to just treating
symptoms. Right. I had a cousin that was, like, in the 90s, was given Ritalin. He was in school. The school told my aunts and my uncle, oh, he's a little hyper, you know,
little black boy hyper, right? Let's slow him down. You know, my aunts and uncles, they came from the islands. They didn't know much. Yeah. And what you do is you put your trust in authority. You want to trust that your government, you want to trust that your doctors are giving you the right information. There are a lot of adults now that had to take certain kinds of drugs when they were a kid because they were misdiagnosed. And then those kids become older, and then now they have another problem because now they need another high to be the adrenaline high.
And again, the fact that we as a people sometimes, like you said, put all of our faith and trust into doctors and stuff like that. And I'm not saying we shouldn't, but we also have to understand that the pharmaceutical industry is also a system. And it's one that's also capitalist.
Yes.
It's a capitalist system. And so I have an aunt who's a pharmacist, and we talk about this stuff all the time because so many times we're just going to the doctor, they prescribe whatever, we take it without question. You know, as a healthcare social worker, I used to tell the employees that I supervise, when you go to those doctor appointments with that person, you need to advocate and make sure that if you notice that they're acting different or they're not themselves, that you tell that doctor, we gotta try something else.
Right. And we need to get multiple opinions.
Yep.
We know that black people, especially black women, are less likely to be believed when they go to the doctor.
Oh, yes.
So I think it's important to give ourselves and our children a chance, right? Give us a chance to survive whatever it is that we're facing. And we need to remember these things, they feed other systems, right? So treating kids when they're very young might contribute to institutionalized problems. It might contribute to the school-to-prison pipeline. So, like, again, all of these, they're intersections. Doctors don't always get it right. And like Shantae said, the pharmaceutical industry, it's a capitalist industry. Just like they say, peace ain't profitable, health ain't profitable.
That's
right?
True.
It profits our country for people to be sick.
This is probably a little off the wall, but I think that social media, typically Twitter, I think people use certain platforms to vent. I believe venting is a way of just relieving stress and also, you know, getting things out. But to vent an underlying issue where some of these people may have mental issues and they go on social media, they cancel you, they hate you, they report you, and they try to cyberbully you. When I look at specifically a cancel culture, going back to mental illness, I feel like one of the ways people are finding to cope with their mental illness or express it is through social media in a negative light, using their power to be disruptive or using their power to hate. What do you guys say about that? You know, using social media or Twitter as an outlet, and not just an outlet to say, hey, you guys, I'm having a bad day. Can you give me some suggestions on what should I do? Right. But using the outlet to deal with your mental illness by creating a hate train.
So this is interesting because I feel like social media goes two ways with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So social media can be a platform to vent, but it can also be a factor in mental health. I'll use myself as an example. Like, coming into 2020, I literally, towards the end of 2019, realized that for whatever reason, like, I felt so out of place and out of my skin, and I just felt like no matter what I tried, it wasn't so good enough or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I really had to stop and think, and I was like, yo, I feel like I'm comparing myself to everything that I'm seeing on social media.
Mm-hmm.
But even though I know that people only post on social media what they want you to see. No one's got
highlight reel.
No one's
highlight reel.
They're always going to load. You know what I'm saying? Like, you may have a very small percentage of people who post everything all the time because they really want to be transparent. But most of us, we post what we want people to see. And so I had to commit myself personally to just basically deactivating all my accounts. And I did it for about 90 days. And when I tell you, that was like the most liberating 90 days of my life. So where you said, where people use social media as a venting platform, we see, like, especially on social media platforms, like how we have so much legislation around now, like cyberbullying. Why? Because we started seeing young kids taking their own lives because of what was being said online. Like, you know, that created a whole new culture of legislation. No, I was just going to say really quickly, so today on our page, I posted about defense mechanisms. So that's part of it, too, because defense mechanisms always operate. And, the main one that a lot of people use that they don't realize is projection, right? Mm. So the example that Jillian just gave about, this person bought them a car, but we know there's history behind it, whatever the case may be, whatever. But, projection is sometimes, I know I'm salty about something, but instead of saying I'm salty about it, I'm going to say, well, Jillian's mad salty about that. Mm-hmm. How do you feel? And that's really bothered.
Right.
And I think that's a lot of what we see online.
True. People say things based off their insecurities. I think Jay-Z was given an example one time about how his uncle said he'll never be able to sell a certain amount of albums, and he ended up doing it and more, and he realized that his uncle was just projecting his fear on him, because he's thinking, here you are, my nephew, younger than me, I can't do it, and I'm bigger than you, so if I can't do it, you can't do it, and that's where it's a problem. I think collectively our goal should be able to come back to a place, an inner place of our correction if needed. I think, correcting myself if needed, but not feeling like correction is everything.
Yeah, we need to correct ourselves and each other, but I think the biggest thing is that we need to be intentional when we correct ourselves. We need to be intentional when we correct each other. Mm-hmm. So that instead of me just correcting Sean Faye for the sake of correcting her, I am intentionally making her aware of something that maybe she wasn't aware of before, mm-hmm. so that these constructive criticism, these corrections are rooted in being progressive and changing and, strengthening our communities as opposed to just other people feeling like that's right. Because I think a lot of times we kind of get on a high horse when we correct other people, and sometimes we correct other people just so we can feel like...
righteous.
Yeah, I know this. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not about what I want to accomplish for myself. It's about the greater goal. When it comes to us, critiquing and correcting each other, we have to make sure that we're rooting ourselves in the greater goal and not being separate.
Right. So one last thing I just want to mention before we wrap the call is if you can't get help for a mental situation or even in general, if you're not being honest with the fact that you are affected by it, how do you expect people to help you?
Human nature, right? It's natural for us to want to protect our ego and our pride. Mm-hmm. And so much of that is wrapped into that. And we don't necessarily have people around us, right? So I always tell people, find your tribe. Because I have friends that... They help me to own my shit when I can't own it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I need that because sometimes I'm tripping. Sometimes I'm really
I've been there.
Struggling mm-hmm. with something that's not a struggle. And sometimes I'm struggling with something that they're like, you know what? Yeah, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. But if you aren't necessarily surrounded by people that are willing to sort of see both ends of the situation, positive or negative, then... yeah, you're going to feel like you got to feel subliminal to get your feelings out because the people that surround you don't want to hear what you have to say.
Mm.
And I feel like that's a dangerous place to be. Yeah, I just want to build off of what Sean said.
Okay.
I think it kind of boils down to, maturity and honesty, right? Mm. We have to be honest with ourselves about not only about how we feel about other people's actions toward us, but how would other people honestly feel about our actions? And then lastly... I personally have a lot of anxiety. Somebody can, who I normally talk to every day, cannot text me back, and I'm like, what did I do? Are they mad at me? You know what I mean?
Right.
I think it's important. One thing I really have to learn is to not take responsibility for what doesn't belong to me. Don't take responsibility for all of those feelings and emotions that don't belong to you.
Right. I just want to thank you ladies for being so, you guys are so open and honest and direct and clear. And I think that a lot of people would definitely learn from that. I myself, will as well. And I just want to thank you guys for tuning into the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. We know you guys also have a podcast. I want you guys to tell the people where they can find you.
So our podcast is called Atypical Social Worker Podcast. And so it's atypical_social_worker and then _podcast. It's on Instagram, www.atypicalsocialworker.com. We release new episodes every single Wednesday, and we really just try and talk about it from the point of view of, helping up-and-coming social workers to stay true to themselves in the field.
Okay.
And we also, make the point that social work is not, you don't have to have the title social worker to be a social worker. If you work with people, if your job revolves around benefiting somebody else, you are a social worker. Mm. So there are just certain tools that you want to have to tool set, especially if you are a social worker that is already marginalized immediately, so that not only you can navigate surviving the workforce on your own, but also so that we can better understand the people that we're serving.
Right. Well, thank you, ladies, so much. We appreciate you spending the time having this phone conversation. It's definitely quarantine time, so we're improvising. And thank you, guys. I hope everybody will tune into your podcast. And thank you for tuning in to the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. You ladies have a great day, okay?
You too.
All right.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi, this is the Shut Up or Talk Up podcast. Am I speaking to Ms. Quinging from Wisdom for Wellbeing?
Yes, this is Ms. Quinging.
Quinging. Okay, sorry about that. Thank you so much for answering. And I know we did have a discussion on prior, and today's topic is about mental health. What are your thoughts in regards to mental health in America today?
It's interesting that of all the things 2020 is, and the different things, you know, some people want to cancel it. Some people think it still has the potential to be the best year ever. I'm more hopeful than not. But one of the things that I am so glad to see is that people seem to be more intentional about their mental health. So I feel like now more than ever before, people are leaning into it, particularly millennials and Gen Xers. Statistically, the millennial age group has pursued mental health care and mental health awareness and things like that more than any other generation before it. So it looks like Gen X, which is my generation, and even boomers and even people who are older, it looks like we're following their lead. And I'm so grateful for it because it's a really great example for our Gen Zs and even Gen Alpha. So I feel like it is on the up and up.
That's great.
And the stigma is not there like it used to be. Now it is as it relates to certain specific things, but just being overall aware about mental health as it relates to coaching, therapy, and counseling, people seem to be going after it. And I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, it's definitely a good sign. I grew up in a Jamaican household, and talking about mental illness was not really a thing. It was just, I think because of the lack of education, or I don't know, everyone's just used to saying, oh, you're crazy. Oh, that person's crazy. Crazy is always a substitute. What would you say when it comes to the dialogue or the wordings or describing it? You know, do you think we're using it appropriately?
I like how you pointed out how you grew up. And I grew up in the Deep South, and same thing. You hear that person's crazy. Oh, she's touched in the head. Oh, he might be disturbed. Oh, you know how they are. That type of thing. Mm-hmm. That's how mental health is seen, as something must be wrong with you. Not that you pursue mental health so that things can go well with you and things to be right with you. And unfortunately, there's still a lot of that kind of stuff going on. I would say the best thing to do now is to be aware of how you yourself are feeling. I think that we can all kind of know when we're a little bit off, but then to also look for signs in other people. Yeah. And even the strong friend, even that person seems to be fading. So I would say it's kind of one of those things where maybe being aware, there are a lot of memes like check on your strong friend, check on this friend, check on that. Mm-hmm. I think that that is real, that it's really about kind of noticing, are you off within yourself?
Right, right. When you mentioned the check on a strong friend, I relate that to my aunt. She is the eldest female out of 7, I believe. And she's a wonderful woman, and she's been like a role model for me. But I remember a couple of years ago after my grandmother passed, she just felt so overwhelmed, and she said that she felt like she always had to be the strong sister. She always had to be the strong one, because when, you know, things wasn't right, everybody came to her, and she and my aunt's like past 60, and just seeing her feeling like all her life she had to be the strong one, and whenever she would fail or did the slightest mistake, it would be a big deal because she's always the one that everybody look up to, and it kind of hurt me. You know, just to see like, wow, that's a lot of weight. And it's a lot, just, you know, because you help everyone, or because you're the one that, you know, always going against certain things. And, you know, even in a family situation, if a sibling situation, just the pressure of even sometimes parents, you know, you know, not knowing, but they select how they communicate with certain children. Why don't you be like your brother? Why don't you be like your sister? Oh, my sister's the strong one. Meanwhile, the strong one is overwhelmed with being the strong one.
That is a heavy burden. Oh. I mean, as you were telling that story, it made me think about my mom, because she's the strong one.
Oh, wow.
In her family. That is a burden and a heavy load that so many Black women have seen and feel like they somehow have to carry. And I'm all about letting that down, because that is too great a burden to carry. There are people literally losing their peace of mind, and then some people even losing their health and eventually their life.
Yes.
Because they're trying to be that strong one. Like, there are some things that you shouldn't have to be strong for.
Right.
We're calling certain things being strong when it's really like enduring dysfunction and enduring toxic situation.
You made such a valid point. You said enduring a toxic situation, and what was the other statement you made? I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. It's like we are enduring dysfunction and calling that being strong. That's not necessarily being strong. Like, there are sisters who are living in homes where they hate to go home. Even in COVID has not been relaxing and rejuvenating and refreshing for a lot of people. It has been for some, but think about it. Like, if you take a woman whose retreat was maybe in going to work, in making a difference, in being a leader for her team at work, but being at home, there was a lot of tension and stress between her and her partner. Now you got to be in that day in and day out.
You know,
and you got kids. You know, like, you don't have to be strong like that. You don't have to endure mistreatment and abuse, whether it's physical, emotional, financial.
That's so important.
It is, you know. Yeah, but yeah, I just say that to say, like, there are people, you know, we're being strong for things that we don't have to. Even, and I hate to say this, you know, because I'm one of those people where I'm probably too much for people who are unchurched and too much for people who are in the church. Kind of like, so this statement may not go over too well, but in church culture, now I'm not talking about faith, I'm talking about
the social, like the social culture within the church culture?
Social culture of church. People also endure things that are overwhelming to their minds.
So valid.
And they do it, yeah, because they feel like if I do something else, then I'm not in faith. So I need to stay and just hope that he's going to change, or I need to stay and hope this is going to get better because, you know, I want to be a good wife.
Or I don't want to block my blessing, or this is the blessing, or I prayed for this.
Yeah, I can block my blessing, so I don't want to tell my mother no when your mother might be a raging narcissist or something and it's controlling you. Like, that's some people's situation, but we just stay strong for it.
Right. Freeze. I know. Just when the conversation was getting even better. To hear the continuation of this conversation, please tune into episode 103 right now so you can get the rest of this conversation and more.